How many pieces of personal data have you sent out into the world today? Your web traffic, how many steps you've taken, your purchases, your driving history? Well, that data can be used to help you or us, but there are also concerns. And that's the subject of a new documentary called The Human Face of Big Data. It airs tonight on PBS stations around the country. And joining us to talk about it is Rick Smolin. He's the executive producer and author of the companion book. He joins us from New York. Welcome.
Nice to be here.
And joining us from Seattle is Shwetik Patel, who's a MacArthur Fellow and Professor of Computer Science and Engineering at the University of Washington. Welcome to you as well.
Thank you.
And Shwetik Patel, in the film you talk about the amount of physical information that we can collect from devices, Fitbits, Apple Watches, the like. What are some of the ways that we can use that data? Let's take the good side first.
Yeah. I mean, if you just think about in the healthcare industry right now, if you think about how healthcare is administered, you go into a physician's office or a doctor's office, they take your vitals and then potentially come up with a diagnosis. They might do some further testing. But just think about what you could do if you could collect physiological information throughout the day in non-invasive ways too. So you don't even have to worry about, doing something proactively. It's something that's passive. Collecting this data could be heart rate. It could be respiratory rate. It could be your movement. And then using, artificial intelligence and machine learning to glean some interesting insights about what may happen in the future before it even happens. So being able to diagnose and predict disease before it's too late.
Well, and actually in this documentary, we hear from Carolyn McGregor, who's a doctor who works with premature infants. And she talks about the fact that in infants, there are minute physical changes that signal that there might be a problem. And collecting large amounts of data can help people spot those changes. Let's listen to her.
The human body has always been exhibiting these certain things. The difference is we've started to gather more information about the body now so that we can build this virtual person. The better we have the virtual representation, then the better we can start to understand what will happen to them in the future.
And she points out that before they started analyzing the data, it would be collected and then just discarded, that some of this key critical information would be missed.
Jeremy, one of the things that fascinates me about the work that Switak does and other people in that field is that, each of us has a personal baseline. Like if you wear your Fitbit or your Apple Watch or the Jawbone, whatever, all these different devices, within a week or so, your phone or your device can basically say, this is what's normal for Jeremy, and this is what's normal for Switak, and what's normal for Rick. So what it looks for is changes in that normal, what's normal for you, which is different than what's normal for me. So right now, we're all facing this. Every year, our healthcare costs are soaring, despite what everyone's trying to do. And one of the hopes is that these devices will say, you know what, your blood pressure is different today, your balance is off, and that you'll catch things early on instead of, 6 years into a problem, that right away your doctor will actually call you based on the data that's coming off of these devices all the time. And the second thing I think is really cool is that there's this sort of gamification of health. Like Sandy, my brother who directed The Human Face of Big Data, and I both wear a Jawbone. My son, who's 11 years old, says, Dad, did you walk more steps than your brother today? So we try to compete to see who's going to get healthier. Instead of it being old, infirm, sick people wearing devices, there's this kind of fun aspect to it where people are actually getting healthier. And instead of seeing the doctor every 6 months for a checkup and you walk in, you're nervous, you forget about half the things that you wanted to ask him about, these devices now give us a real-time feedback loop of the state of our health.
Yeah, I used to use a Fitbit myself, walking around and seeing how many steps I got in a day. And similarly, I had an app on my phone that I would put on my bed and it would tell me when I was sleeping and when I was tossing and turning. And I'd look at the readout the next morning and I could see where I was based on the averages. But, there are some downsides to all of this as well. And you get into that. And I want to listen here to Joy Ito of the MIT Media Lab.
My fear really is that once there's so much data out there and once governments and companies start to be able to use that data to profile people, to filter them out, everybody is going to start to worry about their activities.
Shwetik, what's the case against all this big data?
I think one of the challenges is that because we're gleaning so much information from these sensors, there's all these side effects that we don't really know what they are. So if you think about, being able to monitor, in the example that we've been using right now is in health, just think of what the other things you could do with it, right? If the insurance companies were able to access certain data, could they actually say that, oh, you had a pre-existing condition? now you're starting to uncover things that you may not have been able to uncover before. And really, how is society going to think about the stuff that you can really do with big data that has enabled these new insights that weren't possible before?
Or, Rick, you talk in this film, it's a very funny example. I guess it's funny for me looking at it now. It might not be funny for the people that were affected by it. But there's, at Target, they monitor what kinds of things you purchase, and they can tell if a woman is pregnant by what she's buying even before she may have told anyone. And then they start sending coupons. And in this case, they got an angry customer on their hands.
Right. It's not obvious things. It's not like, well, if she's buying a crib or something like that, you say, well, obviously, this person's probably pregnant. But there was things that, like, women apparently in their second trimester stop buying scented lotion and buy unscented lotion, something that you wouldn't have guessed at, but apparently they've seen a pattern. Jeremy, let me ask you a question. If 10 years ago I walked up to you and said, could I plant a little tracking device on you that would tell me how much money you've spent today, what books you've read, who you've spoken to, what you're curious about, what you've looked up, who you've walked by, who you've talked to.
I would say no way.
No way in hell, right? Like, right. Who would ever allow that? And now we sleep in front of the Apple store for 3 days for the privilege of paying $800 to buy it. I mean, it's kind of weird how we've all, something that sounds so completely horrible, and yet we've all traded it for the incredible convenience. Like, I noticed on my iPhone this morning that when I swiped down to look for the Uber app, it was already there. Like, it knew that every morning that I take an Uber somewhere, and it actually put it in place, and I went, whoa.
No, I open up Waze, and it tells me that it thinks that I'm going to work right now. It says, right. Oh, you're going to work again? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep, I haven't been fired yet. So,
it's pretty strange.
Is there any turning back at this point, or is that it? Are we going down this road, and there's not going to be enough concern about the data that we're putting out there that will actually make things move in the other direction?
I don't think this genie is going back in the bottle anytime soon. I mean, like any other new set of tools and technologies, we have to learn how to use it wisely. It's one of the things that – one of the reasons Sandy and I did this film is I think right now large corporations and governments clearly understand how powerful these tools are to manipulate us, to sell us things, to market us, to target us. And I think that we as individuals, I really believe there ought to be a data bill of rights where instead of opting out of Facebook, the setting ought to be off and that we should opt into things that we want. Because right now, most of us are simply paying no attention to it.
Shwedik, what do you think?
No, I think so. I think one of the things that would be interesting is think about this notion of data transparency, right? You know, one of the issues is that people really don't know what's possible with the data and what's actually happening behind the scenes. So there's a way to make it transparent enough so that people can make their own decisions on what data they can share and what data should be transmitted where. But right now, people need to be educated or society in general needs to have this conversation about, well, what is happening to the data and what rights do we really have with the data? And I think technology could actually help broker that. But right now, we're just at the early – it's pretty nascent in terms of where we are in this space about thinking about that.
You mentioned Waze a minute ago. I love the example of Waze because most people don't realize they're using – this is a driving app, right? And there's lots of driving apps out there. But what I love about Waze is that while you're getting information from Waze about the best way to get to a particular location –
you're giving it as well.
Right. You're donating your data of where you are. Right. So if there's a traffic accident in front of you, the people 2 miles behind you are taken off the road and routed around you. So it's like a living organism. Instead of everybody making the same mistake over and over and over again, the map reroutes. It's like a dynamic living map. And so it's a two-way exchange. It's not creepy saying, oh, you're a human sensor and you're donating all your data and there's no benefit to you. But I think Waze is a great example of how this ought to work. We're aware that we're donating it and we're getting something back, and there's a two-way exchange. So much of what we're seeing in terms of the use of data seems to be a one-way exchange.
Yeah, and it's interesting because now, if you try to put a pulse on society, I would say if you use the word big data or ask somebody about it, the sentiment is on the more towards the negative side because you see all the press around all the negative things that can happen with mining all this data, what the NSA could do, et cetera. But at the same time, people are voting with their feet. You know, they use these apps, they use Waze, they use these technologies where at the end of the day, it's really the data analytics that's enabled this whole technology revolution, this new paradigm. So they can't get away from it, but at the same time, they have a negative view of it.
I have to ask you about one more thing that I just found fascinating here, and people can watch the documentary and see for themselves. But the idea that you can figure out how a child learns how to speak based on the amount of times that a word is used in particular rooms of the
house.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's completely counterintuitive. I think everybody believed that the more times a child hears a word is means that they'll learn to speak that word first. And what Deb Roy did when his son was born is he actually installed cameras and microphones throughout his entire house, in the ceiling, in the potted plants. Yeah, he actually got permission from his wife to turn it off if at any time she thought it was too much. And then after 2 years, they went back and looked at this incredible amount of data, and what they learned is that it was context. It was the more places his son heard a word like water, he would learn that word faster, not how many times he heard the word, but in different places where the word took on understanding for the child. It's an absolutely fascinating, visually it's so arresting when you see this in the film.
So there you go, parents. Just take your kid to all the different rooms of the house and you can teach them different words. Rick Smolin, executive producer of the documentary The Human Face of Big Data, and Shwetik Patel, who appears in the film. He's a MacArthur Fellow and a professor of computer science and engineering at the University of Washington. Great to have you both. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Jeremy.
Thank you.